Master Tamatami Tano Dan, you're the host of the Insurgent Radio Network, broadcasting live from the bunker in north central Indiana, right next to Tamatami's Turtle Tavern, where the elite drink to eat, the first thing you drink. Also nearby is Tamatami's Weapons of Mass Destruction Used Equipment Yard, where you can purchase a freshly refurbished weapon of mass destruction for pennies on the dollar, if the price is right. You can reach Tom at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Address your letters and mail to Tom Metzger, Insurgent, just plain old box holder. Good old Tommy O'Kiss.
That's right. This is old Terrible Tommy here in the bunker right here in north central Indiana. P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And it is June the 7th, 2016. And we're ready to go here. Don't forget to go up to our website. We keep adding new stuff, new news out of the Middle East and all over the place up there. So if you're not going up there, you're fooling around listening to the regular corporate media. You don't know what the hell's going on. So make use of it. There's $1 million worth of information at resist.com. And like I said yesterday, we're reactivating our phone line here, our war phone in the bunker. It's going to be 260-625-3027, and that's exactly what it was back in 2014, according to my records. So the one we have on the internet was not that effective, so we're going back to the old way of doing things. And there's a lot of people out there that don't have computers, so they don't have computers and they want to get a message on the phone line here. I'll put a message out every few days. I think there are a lot of people going to like that because we used to get a lot more calls. Well, chaos is wonderful. I love chaos. I worship chaos. And we're getting it. Boy, I'll tell you, the chaos god loves Terrible Tommy and loves all the lone wolves because everything is chaos now. Everywhere you look, it's chaos. California's blowing up today. They got a voting problem out there. I knew some time ago that there were hundreds of thousands of Californians that were voting for their independence, and they're voting accidentally. They're voting for the American Independent Party. That's the one that the George Wallace Party back in the 60s, 50s, 60s, I guess. Yeah, I was in that, and I was a state representative and all that kind of stuff. But they're mortified because this is a far-right party, and there's hundreds of thousands of Californian independents are voting for it, voting on that ticket. And they got so many goddamn problems in the voting thing out there that they might as well just shut it down. And the way it looks like it's rigged, Hillary's going to lose about half the votes she's supposed to get. So I don't know what's happening to Bernie, but from what I heard on, they're going crazy on left-wing radio. Progressive radio, they're going absolutely out of their minds about this voting thing being so screwed up. Well, I say the first thing you do is take all these damn voting machines and take them down to the scrapyard and turn them into the scrap. Because that's what Ireland did. They got so tired of those damn mistakes and problems with the voting machines, they just junked them all. And that's what they should do here. But I don't think they're going to do it because too many politicians, their brother-in-laws, are selling these machines and they're making millions of dollars off of them. So it's not likely they're going to get rid of the machines. And it's not likely they're going to get rid of the problems that go along with the machines. And of course, all the black folk that are complaining said, there are no ballots down here. We went to a polling station, it wasn't even there. Then we went to another one, and there weren't any ballots there. They were all out of ballots, man. Those motherfucking white guys screwing us again, man. That old Trump. Nature bless chaos. you'll see what I mean as time goes on. It's working in our favor every day. It's getting more and more chaos. And if we can get Trump in the White House, we're really going to have chaos. Especially when he appoints David Duke as his Secretary of Defense. Of defense, yeah. They can bring Monica Lewinsky back into the White House to take care of the boys. Oh, you say she's a Democrat? No, she doesn't have a party. She goes whichever way the mop flops. Monica, we need you back at the White House. Trump and Duke are in the White House. We'll even give you a closet to stay in. I was listening to an interview with a high-ranking military officer over in Iraq, and the reporter was putting his feet to the fire a little bit. Well, how come this Iraqi army ain't worth a shit? he almost said that, you know. Well, the guy gave all kinds of excuses. And the guy said, well, why don't you just split the country up? Have a Kurds part of the country, got the Sunni part of the country, and the other bunch part of the country. And the guy said, well, but the guys that are in the government now, they won't have that. They want to keep the whole thing. Even though it's turned into a hellhole and everybody's killing everybody. But rather than split up like we should do here in this country, they're going to keep trying to make it work. And they sit there wondering, American generals, they know why they're not any good, the goddamn Iraqis. They trained them, they trained them and trained them. But you can't. If somebody doesn't have the natural abilities and so forth, you're not going to train them to do anything. Everybody think, you know, that's like when they used to try to train blacks to be point men on force recon missions in the Marine Corps. It didn't work because they were afraid of the snakes and afraid of the water and afraid of all everything. And they had to go back to white guys at force recon. Carrying on point activity. Yeah, that happened while I was in California. They took all the blacks and took them out of the mess hall and cooks and everything and tried to make them force recon soldiers, Marines. It didn't work. You can't make a purse out of a sow's ear, man. Oh, and this crazy-ass Mexican judge here that's giving Trump trouble from Indiana here. Now they're going crazy in Indiana. Oh, it's absolutely horrible. He called him a Mexican. I mean, oh, it's horrible. This is horrible. We can't have this. We can't have anybody saying anything nasty about a Mexican. Shit, they're next to God. You know that. Yeah, man, it's getting wilder than hell. You know what I think? The average Mexican, if he's working, or black, if he is a working type, he don't care if you call him a nigger or a spick or what. As long as you give him a job, he's got a job to make a living. He don't give a shit about those names. You know, the Democrats, they're funny. They don't want you to be called nigger or anything like that. But they also don't get you any jobs. So most blacks I talk to said, give me the jobs. I don't care what you call me. And that makes common sense. But where's the common sense in this country anymore? I don't think there is any common sense. I bet you just like the vote over in Scotland for separation from England, same thing is going to happen on this England separating from the EU. I'll bet they don't. I'll bet they don't. I'd be surprised. You ought to read some of the bad-mouth emails I get from Britain. I mean, these people are white nuts. I mean, they're just so incensed that I strive for the white working man. You're horrible. You're terrible. You should be shot. You should be this. You should be that. From other white people. That's the way it goes. How about this? St. Louis police. The city has spent $4.7 million to settle 44 cases of police brutality since 2010. Some of the most brutal cases. The money is still taken from the pockets of the taxpayers, not the criminals. How about a personal accountability for killers in blue? Well, you know, that's one thing we should pay attention to, that if they're spending millions to buy off the blacks, I say that the heads of the police department's feet should be held to the fire, and if they've got people committing obvious crimes in while they're in uniform, then we should not be paying for it. The taxpayers should not be paying for it. So $4.7 million paid out to get Negroes off their backs is too much money, man. And, of course, every major city's doing this. Instead of straightening out their police departments and reforming things and firing the higher-ups who screw up, they're paying these people off to the tune of millions in every major city in the country. I guess they feel that's just the cost of doing business. Well, I see that bitch Black Panther Angela Davis is still around. She got almost away with murder back in the day. She was an avowed Marxist. And she went in and broke some guys out of jail and all kinds of shit. She got away with a whole bunch of stuff and didn't pay for it either. So she's back supporting Black Lives Matter. She is a true black bitcheroo. Read about her and Google. Well, this is going to surprise a few whiteys out there that are sensitive. Why do people think that every character in a book is white if the race is not specified? Amazing J.K. Rowling proves that it's not a must. She chose a black actress for the role of Hermione in the next Harry Potter series. Oh boy, that's going to be interesting when that comes out. Well, I picked up a new song here the blacks are putting out. Vic Minza, world premiere, whose song 16 Shots. And I watched the video. This was supposed to be the killing of that Laquan McDonald, who was shot 16 times. And they showed the video of the cop shooting him. And I got to tell you, I think the blacks got a case here. And the reason I bring this up is because many times the same thing happens to white people, not just black people. Maybe not quite as high a percentage with white people, but it happens and it's going to get worse. I guarantee you it's going to get worse. So I'm going to play a little bit of this song that just came out.
People early with this record, 16 Shots.
Let's
because
do that.
I know that's near and dear to your heart.
Yeah, for
where
real.
Where you from in Chicago. Tell the people what this is about.
The record 16 Shots is about the murder of Laquan McDonald. He was a 16-year-old kid in Chicago. He was killed by a police officer named Jason Van Dyke, emptied a clip on him. All he had was a knife. He was 20 feet away and just put him down like that. But honestly, it's I was inspired to make the song by my time down on the ground floor in the street when we were, revolting against that. This record is like self-defense, because to me, Laquan McDonald represents Emmett Till, which represents every name down the line.
Yeah.
And since then, a lot of things have changed, but one main thing hasn't changed is that our lives are not respected.
Yeah. So let's get the record on, man. The project, there's a lot going on. I got that title, right? It's Apple Music. Vic Mensa's up.
Ready for the war, we got our boots strapped. 100 deep on State Street with a troop set. The mayor lying, say didn't see the video footage, and everybody wanna know where the truth at. On the south side where it's no trauma centers but the most trauma. A lot of cannons but you don't want no drama. I can't imagine if it was my own mama. Got a firstborn son, stole from her. He never had a chance and we all know it's cause he black. Shot him 16 times, how fucked up is that? Now the police police superintendent want a double back. Cops beating up to the block like a running back. Tension is high, man, these niggas is irate. You can see it in their eyes, they want to violate. Screaming out, oink, oink, bang, bang, gang, 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 gang. Murder, 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 they mind state. I just made me a meal and still militant. This ain't conscious rap, this shit ignorant. The hair trigger ain't no fun when the rabbit got the gun.
When I cock back, police better run.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 16 shots, and we bucking back 16 shots. 16 shots, and we bucking back 16 shots. They threw a little girl down on the pavement, pushed her with a bike and said, stay out the way, bitch. She was bleeding on the ground through her braces. This what happened when niggas don't stay in their places. The mayor dumping weight, he fired the superintendent. But resignation come with bonuses and recognition. So we gon' break in the stores on Magnificent Mile. And if we got a goal, let's go to prison in style. Cops killing kids and staying out of jail. But Bobby Shmurda can't even catch bail. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Now I got everybody yelling out for 12. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 16 shots, and we bucking back 16 shots. 16 shots, and we bucking back 16 shots. Clip with an extendo, and we rolling with it hanging out the window. We on 16th riding by the police station. We might make a pork rind out of pig, bro. Somebody tell these motherfuckers, keep their hands off me. I ain't a motherfucker slave, keep your chains off me. You better hope this 9mm jam on me or get blown. I hope you got your body cam turned on. The black cop too, that's the same fight. You got a badge, but you still ain't white. This for Laquan on sight when you see Van.
Well, there you go. That's about half of that song. I mean, I am not really a song, but sort of lyrics. The lyrics are interesting because we do have a lot of bad cops in this country, and they're getting worse. And that's what happens when you get bad cops. Bad things start to happen. And you got to be honest about it and say, look, I looked at the video of the shooting of this McDonald. It's ridiculous. And you got to understand that they will gun down a white working man the same way. They will. And they do. And remember that, because it's not just the blacks. And if the blacks got a legitimate gripe, a legitimate case, then we should respect it, as far as I'm concerned. And if these cops are too cowardly to, that they just got to draw their gun every time it starts shooting at people, and I've seen it in California, I'll tell you that. When I was in California, I saw a lot of, well, not a lot, but I've seen several people murdered by the cops. I've got a list of them. And some of them were good white people, too. But I don't hear any songs about that. I don't hear any white songs bitching about it. The Skinheads used to have some of that kind of music, but I don't think that's around much anymore. Where are the white singers that can put out stuff bitching about the cops from our point of view? I haven't heard of any. Do you know of any? Let me know. Now, the following clip has to do with the Robert Kennedy assassination, which most people have forgot about. They go on and on every once in a while when they have a memorial or birthday. They go on and on about these guys. But really, most people don't give a shit. But the point is, I'm not concerned about the death of Robert Kennedy, because the whole Kennedy family were assholes and not really on our side. But in most cases, these are carried off by CIA or FBI or hired guns or whatever. and they're very clever at cleaning them up and quiet, making it quiet and keeping the important evidence undercover. So here's a little thing. It's about 7 minutes long for you.
I traveled to the other side of the country to meet up with a man who worked in covert operations in the 60s and was at the Ambassador Hotel that night. David Rayburn had been shown the photograph of Morales and remembered seeing him there.
That's the same man that you saw in the photograph?
Oh, yeah. That's him. I didn't see him in the ballroom. I saw him out in the lobby area. In fact, I probably saw him several times. He was in and out.
I just want you to have a look at this photograph. The two men in the center. This photograph was taken, I think, a couple of hours before the assassination. So we're just looking at the two figures here in the middle. I just wonder if you saw either of those men that night.
This man here, the bald one.
Yeah.
I think he was talking to Morales at one time. It's like he was standing talking to him.
If Campbell was the man on the left of the photograph, who is the guy on the right? I went back to the East Coast to meet a lawyer at Cornell University, Ed Lopez. In 1978, he was a 23-year-old investigator for the Congressional Committee looking into the JFK assassination. I thought he might know our third man.
Let me just take you back a minute. Here we were, a congressional committee, investigating who might have killed a president back in 1963. As you know, the majority of the American public at the time said there had been a conspiracy.
The man the CIA called out of retirement to work as their liaison to the House Select Committee on Assassinations was George Joannides. He never disclosed he worked as chief of psychological warfare operations at the CIA's Miami base in 1963.
I saw George Joannides practically every day for months. George Joannides was the guy who was supposed to be our point person. But when we got down to work, he was all business. What we could see, what we couldn't see, why we could see something, why we couldn't see something, why it was redacted, why it wasn't redacted.
Let me now show you a photograph that was taken in the Ambassador Hotel the night Robert Kennedy died. And I'd like you to look at the figure on the right center of frame.
Well, when I look at this picture, the guy is young and in shape, always standing, you know, stands erect. It's the way I remember him being. The glasses, his hair slightly receding. At the time, it was dark. By the time that I got to meet him, it was graying. But it's just, you know, I mean, you just look at him and you say, this is the guy that I spent many hours with at Langley. This is George Joannides.
Not everyone I spoke to could identify our three CIA agents. I interviewed Tom Kleins and Ed Wilson, both former agents and close colleagues of David Morales. They said I and all the others were mistaken, but they weren't willing to go on camera. Could there be an innocent explanation for the presence of these three CIA agents at the Ambassador Hotel that night?
Is David Morales a suitable figure to protect Bobby Kennedy?
No. No, I mean, in my wildest imagination, I couldn't imagine assigning David Morales to protect any of the Kennedys.
Suspicion? I have suspicion. Yes, I have to. I can't deny that. So, why they were doing the things that they were doing, I'm surprised that was never investigated.
What do you think needs to be done now?
Well, I think the key people at the CIA need to go back to anybody who might have been around back then. Bring them in and interview them. Ask, is this Gordon Campbell? Is this George Joannides? Did you know about any operation going on? If you didn't, then why the hell were they there?
After so many interviews and some conflicting testimony, my gut feeling is that still these three senior CIA operatives were the men behind the assassination. Who were these men and why were they at the hotel that night? The CIA and the Los Angeles Police Department owe the public an explanation before the truth behind the Robert Kennedy assassination is lost to history.
There are some who talk about my youth. It is true I am younger than many who have run for president, and older than many of those who founded this country. Whatever my years, however, I will gladly match my experience with that of others who have aspired to the presidency. And after all, we are still a young country.
If you'd like to watch that film again, it's on our website. Do tell us whether you're convinced by the identifications. Shane O'Sullivan, who is the author of that piece, is with us here.
Indication that they looked in a lot of places, but they didn't look in the correct places during the original investigation.
Now, formally, I believe the CIA have said what about these guys? They say they don't comment.
You know, I mean, the comments you'd expect, that they can't go into previous operatives' identities, and that also they have no domestic jurisdiction. So the question that we're asking is, we have interviewed various people who knew these men well. They say that they're the men in the photographs, so we're asking the CIA and the Los Angeles Police Department to address that question. You know, is this the men we think they are, and why are they there?
Why do you think they were there?
Well, I don't think there's any credible explanation for why they would be there if they are CIA operatives, and that's the question that we're trying to clear up. They wouldn't have been Kennedy's security if you know the men's backgrounds. They'd have professed hatred of the Kennedys. Morales made the comment that we listened to, that he was in Dallas in 63 and Los Angeles in 68.
You don't get any anxiety about potential libel suits?
Well, we know that Morales died in 1978, just weeks before he was due to be called before the House Select Committee on Assassinations. Janitas died in 1990. Gordon Campbell may still be out there. So, yeah, a libel suit is a possibility, but then we also would have discovery in terms of showing how important this material is.
Assuming there is much more to it than the straight Sirhan story, do you think we'll ever get to the bottom of it?
I think it's important that we do. I mean, there's a guy called Paul Schrade who was walking behind Kennedy on the night, and he was shot in the head, and he's been one of the leading campaigners to reopen the case for years because of the second gun theory and various doubts that there have been around. So I think this evidence is quite important because it's the first time that we've actually showed a CIA presence on the night at a domestic assassination, and it's important that we get some answers to this from the relevant authorities.
Shane Sullivan, thank you. Coming up on the program.
Favorite habit of the Federals or whoever it is, assassins, let's put it that way. There's the fall guy that's been talked into it or whatever up front, but they don't ever want to leave that to chance, so there's always second gun, third gun, fourth gun, whatever, to make sure that it gets done right. Seems like what happened in the Robert F. Kennedy and also in the John F. Kennedy situation. So that way afterwards they can, you know, grab Lee Harvey Oswald and pin the whole thing on him, or Sirhan, pin the whole thing on him. Because, yeah, he was there, and, yeah, he may have taken the shot. But the kill shot is usually done by pros in the immediate background. I only play this to let you know that this is the way governments are run. No matter what you hear in history class and civics in school, this is the way governments really are run when it gets down to the wire. Now, with Hillary, what about Vince Foster? That's all seems to have gone away and probably will go away forever because these people are really experts at covering things up. I say almost every high-ranking politician in the government, or our government, or any government, has skeletons in the closet and are actually have probably been involved in murder and assassination. It's going to be interesting to see this Trump situation unfold because many times people can get out of control, and I think Trump was brought in for a specific reason, but I don't think they realize that he may get out of control, and if he does really get out of control, they're going to have to figure another John F. Kennedy situation. My favorite film on the subject, and I've told you this before, is The Manchurian Candidate, the black and white copy, the one that Frank Sinatra kept out of syndication for a long time, 20 years I believe it was, And that was interesting that he did that. But I think that movie was so close to what some of the operations that keep going on in the government and so forth, that you should watch it. Later version with the Negro star, forget that one. Well, not necessarily. There's some scenes in it that are pretty good, but the original black and white Manchurian candidate is pretty much the way governments are run. Well, at least when they get their back to the wall. I mean, during normal corruption operations, it's just whores and getting drunk and child molesting and things like that. But if they really get their ass up against the wall, out comes the secret shooters. Well, boys and girls, I'm going to read you a little bit of a pretty important piece of information about Hillary Clinton. But I was going to have it our assistant read it to you, but my program seems to be down. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is in a legal pickle over her careless email practices, in that she appears to have endangered national security secrets, including the identity of covert CIA officers, and done so for selfish reasons, for personal convenience, or keeping her documents out of reach of the transparency laws. The facts of the case would seem to merit criminal charges against her, since Clinton's situation is analogous to problems faced by other senior officials, including former CIA directors John Deutsch and David Petraeus, who were accused of mishandling classified information. Deutsch by having secret material on his home computer, and Petraeus for giving notebooks with highly sensitive information to his lover biographer. Deutsch agreed to plead guilty to the misdemeanor, but was preemptively pardoned by President Bill Clinton. Petraeus pled guilty to a misdemeanor in a plea deal that spared him from jail time and was widely criticized as excessively lenient, especially since the Obama administration had jailed lower-level officials such as former CIA officer John Caracow for similar violations. Yeah, and remember, it's a 5-year rap to lie to the FBI, which I'm sure Petraeus did. In 2012, faced with multiple count indictment, Caracow agreed to plead guilty to one count of violating the 1982 Intelligence Identities Protection Act for giving a reporter the phone number of a former CIA officer whose work for the spy agency was still classified, though the reporter did not publish the ex-officer's name. Caracow was sentenced to 30 months in prison. The Intelligence Identifies Protection Act was also a factor in the Plumgate affair in 2003, when officials of George Bush's administration disclosed that the CIA identity of Valerie Plame as part of the campaign to discredit her husband, former U.S. Ambassador Joseph Wilson, who had challenged Bush's claim about Iraq seeking yellowcake uranium for a nuclear program, one of the falsehoods that was used to justify invading Iraq. Right-wing columnist Robert Novak blew Plame's undercover identity, but a special prosecutor chose not to indict anyone, including Bush's aides, under the 1982 law. He did, however, convict Vice President Dick Cheney's chief of staff, I. Louis Libby, of obstructing justice. However, Bush commuted Libby's sentence, so he avoided jail time. See how they take care of each other, boys and girls? The recent State Department Inspector General report makes it clear that Clinton's blithely disregarded safeguards designed to protect the most highly classified national security information that she included on her unprotected email server, the names of U.S. intelligence agents undercover. In other words, there is a legal precedent for Hillary Clinton's being charged in connection with her decision to handle her State Department emails through a personal server in her home in Chappaqua, New York. rather than through official government servers. But there's political precedent as well for the well-connected to be either slapped on the wrist or let off the hook. Beyond Clinton's legal predicament over secrets, there's also the question of how she manipulates the information on small matters as well as big. There is a pertinent Bible quotation, quote, "If you are faithful in little things, you will be faithful in large ones. But if you are dishonest in little things, you won't be honest with great responsibilities." And I happen to have personal experience with how Clinton has been dishonest in a little matter of my brutal arrest on February 15, 2011, after I stood with my back turned toward her while she delivered a speech at George Washington University about the importance of respecting dissent in other countries, that is. I have looked closely at her relevant email exchanges from the late February 2011 from Secretary Clinton, didn't miss a syllable as I was roughly dragged away by security personnel right in front of her. From my review of those emails, I had two takeaways. One, Secretary Clinton is not truthful about the smallest of things, and two, that she has had a much more important issue to worry about at the time, namely rallying support for a no-fly zone as gateway to a regime change, war on Libya, and murdering Omar Gaddafi. At the same time, he was planning to create a gold money piece for Libya and escape the controls of the Federal Reserve and all that kind of stuff. Could that be why she never took up her confident Sidney Blumenthal suggestion that an apology to me might be in order, since the emails speak so eloquently of both issues? I will cite them below. On my standing silently at George Washington University, February 15, 2011. I'm not going to read all of this, but, quote, "Don't know if you're aware of this unfortunate incident described below on Larry Johnson's website. Ray McGovern, a former CIA officer who gave the daily brief for President George H.W. Bush, is pretty well known in the intelligence community. He's become a Christian anti-war leftist who goes around bearing witness. Whatever his views, he's harmless. Something bad happened at our speech at GW. And it's become a minor cause celeb on the internet among lefties who might have someone check this out and also have someone apologize to Ray McGovern." I'm not going to go through all this. It's pretty extensive. But the incident with me was minor compared to what Secretary Clinton was then cooking up for Libya, where she was outraged that Colonel Muammar Gaddafi was citing the need to root out Islamic terrorists operating around Benghazi. Dismissing Gaddafi's claims, Clinton and her State Department preferred to denounce Gaddafi's domestic war on terror as genocidal attack on innocent dissenters in eastern Libya. Again, Clinton was communicating with her outside advisor, Blumenthal, about how to rile the world up enough against Gaddafi to push the no-fly zone through the United Nations Security Council. Secretary Clinton's private emails also contradict her testimony before the House Benghazi Committee that Blumenthal was not at all my advisor on Libya, although I guess it depends on what your definition of advisor is. The emails show that she actually took immediate proactive steps to follow up on his advice, as can be seen in the following. Well, there's more emails here. It took three more weeks, but on March 17, 2011, Secretary Clinton got her wish for a no-fly zone approved by the UN Security Council, acting under the military authority of Chapter 7 of the UN Charter. The vote was 10 in favor, 0 against, and 5 abstentions. You see, the UN is only used by certain people, the super powerful people, to get exactly what they want. The UN is nothing but a U.S. power structure created whore. And it's only used as a weapon against people certain powerful people don't like. The five abstentions were Brazil, Russia, India, China, and Germany. Russian and China, which as permanent members could have vetoed the motion, complained later that they were deceived as to the real purpose of the no-fly zone, not realizing that it was a pretext for another regime change which involved slaughtering much of the Libyan army before driving Gaddafi from power. When Gaddafi was captured in his hometown of Sirte on October 20, 2011, he was tortured with a knife, which was used to sodomize him. Then he was murdered. When Clinton was notified of Gaddafi's demise, she declared, quote, "We came, we saw, he died," and clapped her hands in undisguised glee. It turned out, however, that Gaddafi was right that many of his adversaries in the East were radical jihadists and terrorists, a truth that Clinton learned from the U.S. Ambassador Christopher Stevens, and three other U.S. personnel were slain by attackers in Benghazi on September 11, 2012. Clinton's deception around the Libyan no-fly zone as a gateway to yet another brutal U.S.-backed regime change also helped poison U.S. relations with Russia and China, which balked at similar U.S. demands for a safe zone inside Syria, an idea that Clinton had advocated both as Secretary of State and as a presidential candidate. In other words, Clinton is no more honest about big things than small, just as the Bible passage foretold, except now the fate of the world may hang in the balance. And this is the bitch they want to have president of the United States. You might as well just call her a crime lord right off. She's nothing but a filthy crime lord. And her husband's just her toady that follows her around and picks up an occasional nigger whore to keep himself happy. You know, his office is in New York there, the black part of town. Biggest problem to get across is how rotten, how filthy, how corrupt the people in Washington are. I mean, they're beyond anything. I mean, like, it's, you know, the stuff comes through and you read it, you say, how bad could it get? Well, it can get really bad. So the whole system's got to collapse, hopefully soon. Well, let's see what Jew Power is up to. Yeah. Just a second here. Let me get things straight here. The New York City Human Rights Commission versus Orthodox Jews. Last week, the New York Times published an editorial complaining about a public swimming pool in the Brooklyn neighborhood of Williamsburg that has designated women-only hours every week to accommodate the mores of the area's largely Hasidic population. The policy also provoked the ire of New York City Human Rights Commission Mark Hemington, who writes the following. After an anonymous complaint, the Human Rights Commission intervened and stopped the pool from offering female-only swimming hours. These hours were later restored after the city officials and the state assemblyman Don Hyken stepped in. This is the second high-profile attack on Human Rights Commission has made on the city's Orthodox Jewish population in the last couple of years. After Jewish stores in Williamsburg started putting up signs in their windows requiring the customers to adhere to a dress code, the commission sprang into action and threatened fines. Again, there was big double standard. The Four Seasons restaurant could require diners to wear a jacket and a tie, but Jewish business owners could not. There seems to be a troubling trend where local officials are attempting to criminalize behavior that would otherwise be acceptable, but only when it has religious motivations. The attacks on Jews by the New York City Human Rights Commission and the New York Times are also good reminders that religious liberty concerns are not just limited to Christians. Accommodating a large local religious population in a public facility a few hours a week hardly seems like an injustice. But at this point, it's hard to refute the fact that the major goal of the left seems to be driving any trace of religiosity from public square. Well, the bottom line is they're using religion on allocations of time to swim in the pool. And they're also, shopkeepers are demanding a dress code for people who shop in their stores. I mean, you know, can you imagine that if, could you imagine that if we had stores around and tried to do that? These guys are powerful, these Hasidic Jews, and there are thousands and thousands of them. And like we've been told before by Stray Dog, that they pollute the area down in New Jersey where they dump their crap all over the place, and nobody makes them clean it up. So this is really something else of how they get away with this shit. And I'm sure they did the same thing under the Weimar Republic. Just another reason why the National Socialists and the Germans got pissed off and did a number on them. The same Orthodox Jews over in Israel throw their weight around over there to where they don't serve, haven't served in the military. They don't pay taxes. And as secular Jews complained to me while I was over there looking around, that these guys are getting a free ride all around. I mean, they have big families, but they're not paying taxes. Secular Jews and non-religious Jews are taxed to the hilt and are drafted into the military. I think this is an Achilles heel of Israel, and it can be exploited. Here's some more of the Jews crying in their beer again. Several Eastern European countries, while having past rife with virulent anti-Judaism, differ greatly in their policies toward Israel when compared to their Western European counterparts. That does not mean that everything they do is in favor of Israel. Far from it. The entire EU, including these Eastern European countries, voted in favor of the latest UN resolution. Resolution so-called slandering Israel as the world's only health violator. Nevertheless, East European countries today, represent the only part of Europe that, out of a national interest or a genuine sense of solidarity, stands with Israel in one form or another. You see, that's probably why we've got this problem there in Eastern Europe. In December, Czech lawmakers passed resolutions criticizing the decision by the European Union to label Israeli goods from Judea and Samaria and the Golan Heights, and urged that the Czech government not to abide by it. Characteristically, all Czech political parties supported the resolutions, even those on the left, save for the communists. Communists were the only one who voted against it. How about that? Most recently, the Slovak and Lithuanian parliaments have decided to form pro-Israel caucuses, a result of an initiative by the Knesset's Christian Allies Caucus, the World Jewish Congress, and the International Christian Embassy in Jerusalem. Ooh, isn't that nice? These countries may sympathize with Israel because they still retain a sense of logic and pride in their heritage and do not harbor any secret wish for national suicide. That's a veiled threat if there ever was one. Don't harbor any secret wish for national suicide. In other words, the Jews will punish you if you get out of line. After living under totalitarianism for half a century, while Western Europe was harvesting the peace dividend of being under the American protective wing and growing increasingly more wealthy and materialistic, forgetting completely what it means to be terrorized. Those countries that used to be under the Soviet boot see very clearly that Israel's fight against Islamic terrorism is their fight, too. Read between the lines on that one, boys and girls. Read between the lines. I think the most important statement there is that they don't wish to commit national suicide by criticizing Israel. Here's a bit with Bill Dana back in the day, probably in the 60s, and if they use the same yardstick on these guys as they do Trump, they'd have been in real trouble, the real trouble.
Many people do not realize that every year courses are given to prospective Santa Clauses to teach them how Santa Claus is supposed to act and speak. What is your name, sir, and what course do you teach?
My name, Jose Jimenez. I to Santa Claus. I teach to Santa Claus. So, I to Santa Claus. I teach Santa Claus to speak.
This is Dave Hinckley, back with Jose Jimenez.
You are back with me.
Yes, sir, I don't want to seem impertinent, but just exactly what do you teach Santa Claus to say?
Well, first I teach Santa Claus to laugh.
You teach him to laugh?
Yes, I teach him to say, ho, ho, ho.
Now, if Bill Dana had done this bit, or these two bits I'm playing for you, now, he'd be crucified. He'd never work in another nightclub again as a comedian.
A new policy here at the Hungry Eye is to bring you people who are in the news currently, and the gentleman you're about to meet could possibly be the most important man in any of our lives. He's the United States Air Force officer who has been chosen to be the first man sent into outer space. I'm referring to the chief astronaut with the United States Interplanetary Expeditionary Force, and here he is now. How do you do, sir? May we have your name?
My name, Jose Jimenez.
And you're the chief astronaut with the United States Interplanetary Expeditionary Force?
I am the chief astronaut. With the United States Interplanetary. My name, Jose Jimenez.
Mr. Jimenez, could you tell us a little about your spacesuit?
Yeah. It's very uncomfortable.
How much did the spacesuit cost?
That spacesuit cost
$18,000. $18,000?
Yeah.
That seems rather expensive.
Well, it has two pair of pants. So that's only $9,000.
Yes. I've been noticing this, Mr. Jimenez. What is this called? A crash helmet?
Oh, I hope not.
What are the physical qualities that they look for in an astronaut?
The physical quality they look for in the astronaut. You got to have the perfect hearing. You got to have the perfect vision. You got to have the normal blood pressure. You got to have four legs.
You have to have four legs?
Yeah, they were going to send a dog, but they thought that would be too cruel.
Mr. Jimenez, you must have some opinions on the race for space.
All right, I will. I got one.
Good. What do you think of Vanguard 1 and Jupiter 2?
That was a pretty close game.
Well,
I thought for sure the bank I was going to take it.
It was close, yes.
But you were reading the papers about it.
I know. Yes. Now tell me, Jose.
I'll tell you, Jose.
Tell me.
Yes, I'll tell you. You just ask me and I tell you.
All right. Were you a participant at any of the rocket launchings at Cape Canaveral?
I was a participant at any of the rocket launchings at Cape Canaveral. I was there when they opened the door into the nose cone. They took their mouth and they put their mouth inside the nose cone. Then they closed the door on that little mouth. I don't want to talk about it.
Oh, Mr. Mendes, please. Please, let's try to continue here. I want to ask you, what is the most important thing in rocket travel?
To me, the most important thing in the rocket travel is the blast off.
The blast off.
I always take a blast before I take off. Otherwise, I wouldn't get in that thing.
Well, after that, what is the procedure in taking off?
The procedure after that in taking off, you got to put on a set-top hydraulic double dynamo reversible booster. You got to activate the decompression activator. And you got to put on the anti-magnetic decousing system.
And then you're really up there.
No, that opens the door. And lets out that little mouth.
Let's talk about the rockets themselves.
Well, I had trouble once with one of the rockets.
At Cape Canaveral?
No, at the Radio City Music Hall. Something about separate maintenance.
Yes. Let's change the subject.
Okay, if you know how.
Let's talk about the actual rocket trip.
Okay.
By the way, do you know it's costing the government $7 billion to send you on this trip into outer space?
That's not my fault. I told them I was willing to go tourist. And they said it's such a long trip. Go first class, and that's what adds up.
Okay. Do you think the
baggage?
Do you think there will be life on Mars?
Maybe if I land on a Saturday night, something might be happening. Otherwise, I'm going to bring a book.
That's something I wanted to ask you about, Mr. Jimenez. Of course, it's a very long trip into outer space.
Yes, it's a long trip.
And I just wonder what you'll do to entertain yourself during those long, lonely, solitary hours when you're all by yourself.
Well, I plan to cry a lot.
I would imagine that food is a major problem on a trip into outer space.
I would imagine that food is a major problem on a trip into outer space. And it is, you know. They only allowed you to have the 10 ounces of food.
Only 10 ounces of food?
That's right.
Well, how will you manage?
I'll eat out.
After you've been into outer space, Mr. Jimenez, and you return to Earth, where will you be landing?
I am going to be landing in Nevada.
In the state of Nevada?
In the state of Nevada.
Then you're convinced that they'll get you back to Earth?
I am convinced that they will get me back to Earth.
Good.
Just how far into it? That's what I'm not convinced about.
Well, surely they've made some provisions to break your fall.
To break my fall?
Yes.
Sure, Nevada.
Well, Mr. Jimenez, I think you're certainly to be congratulated for this very, very dangerous undertaking.
Well, don't say undertaking.
Mission. This very dangerous mission.
That's a better choice of words.
And before you go...
Don't even say go.
Before that, I just wonder if there are a few words that you'd like to say to the people of the United States.
Yeah, there are a few words that I'd like to say.
Please go ahead.
People of the United States. People of the United States, America. Please don't let them do this to me.
Just remember, boys and girls, the one great weapon, well, there's several weapons, but the one great weapon the Aryan has over its enemies is a sense of humor. And if you don't have a sense of humor, you're missing a weapon. And if you don't have a sense of humor, you couldn't get through all this crap and still be able to laugh about it. Remember that. Sense of humor. Laugh. Laugh at your enemies. It drives them crazy. I always smile at them, you know, whenever I'm on one of these TV shows or these people come around, and I smile all the time. It drives them nuts. Drives them crazy. I'll see you tomorrow. Wotan's Day. David Lane's favorite day.
We've had a go for auto sequence start. The SRB hydraulic power units have started. T-minus 21 seconds, and the solid rocket booster engine gimbal now underway. T-minus 15 seconds.
T-minus
10, 9, 8, 7, 6. We have main engine start. 4, 3, 2, 1, and liftoff. Liftoff, and it has cleared the tower.
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is Insurgent Radio Network calling.
The station with the happy difference.
And this is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy, in the heartland and in the bunker. Ready for another big shoe here today, right here on our stage. Yeah.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581 is the address. Address your mail to either Box Holder or Tom Metzger or the Insurgent, and we'll get it, no matter which one you use. Yeah.